There are some 37,000 names listed in the Michigan Public Sex Offender Registry, a registry very easy for anyone to search. But there are questions about Michigan's registry and whether it's really keeping us as safe as we'd like to think it is. The fact that people with misdemeanor offenses are listed right alongside rapists, pedophiles, hardcore offenders, and the fact that a federal judge recently declared parts of Michigan's registry law to be too vague, even unconstitutional. J.J. Prescott is a law professor at the University of Michigan and a widely recognized authority on sex offender laws. Welcome to Stateside, Professor.
Thanks for having me.
Well, people might be very surprised to discover that Michigan's sex offender registry has the fourth highest per capita listing of people in the country. Why is that?
Just the breadth of the coverage of the law. I mean, different states do this differently, but Michigan has opted for essentially determining who is going to be on the list based on the statute they were convicted under. We don't actually spend any time in Michigan thinking about risk levels posed by these people. And so once you just look at the law they were convicted of violating, you wind up having a lot of people on the list.
And as I'm looking at the list right now, Michigan's Public Sex Offender Registry, maintained by the Michigan State Police, I see there are 36,942 offenders on this list. Do you think all of those people should be there?
Absolutely not. It's pretty easy to find examples of people who really don't belong on the list for lots of different reasons. I mean, some of them have offended a while ago and have shown themselves in recent years to not really be a threat. Some of them have been convicted of or pled guilty to crimes that don't really describe what they actually did. And again, there's no reason to believe that they're a threat. But there are other really important reasons for worrying about the consequences of these registries that have less to do with whether or not these people are dangerous. Really, the question is whether or not we're using a policy that will make them more dangerous. And that's been my concern in my research.
And what is that? What is your concern and what is your research focusing on?
It actually makes intuitive sense that if we think somebody might be dangerous, even, you know, maybe we don't even know whether they're more dangerous, but we think they might be more dangerous, that it makes sense to put them on a list, give people the opportunity to know who they're living near. In a sense, it seems like, how can this hurt? But it actually can. First, it lulls us into a false sense of security. We sort of assume that, okay, well, I know who the sex offenders who have been convicted of crimes are near me. Mm-hmm. And that ought to make me feel comfortable. As long as I kind of know where my kids are, if they're not near where those people are, everything should be fine. But actually, most sex crimes are not recidivist crimes. They're new individuals who've never committed crime or have never been convicted of committing crimes previously. The other reason why it's problematic is it actually makes you think that just by knowing, you're actually safer. I mean, some might analogize this to TSA, sort of designed to make us feel like we're safer, when in fact, actually a lot of sex crimes, a large majority of them, are committed by people that, you know, that the victim knows, maybe even family members. It's not the stranger danger that we oftentimes associate with sex offender registries, worrying about the person who might jump out of the bushes or find us in a park at night. The other part of this equation that we haven't paid a lot of attention to, at least in policymaking, is creating and exacerbating risk factors for recidivism. So we sort of assume that these laws don't make people more dangerous. In other words, we assume that they are who they are, and they're going to maybe attack, maybe not attack, maybe slip back into committing crime. But we have nothing to do with that possibility. Mm. But if you put somebody on a list and you make it so they can't get a job, they can't find stable housing, they can't form stable relationships, turns out that it's a lot more likely that they're going to attempt crime in the first place. And then you have to ask yourself whether or not you would rather have somebody who is sort of upset, angry, in a bad place, trying to commit a crime, and they happen to be listed on the registry, or whether you'd rather have the police know who they are, but otherwise, you know, spending our effort trying to integrate them back into society where they don't want to commit crime and they don't have any reason to commit a crime, and where actually if we threaten them with returning them to prison, it actually matters to them. Whereas if you're thinking about living in a world where, you know, you can't interact with people as a normal person would, can't find a job, can't find stable housing, winds up looking a lot like prison. And prison isn't much of a threat anymore.
That public shaming, then.
Yeah, I mean, it's public shaming to the point where somebody might actually say, what's the difference? You know, I'm living as a pariah miserably outside of prison, and if I get caught committing a crime, big deal. So I go back to prison where, you know, where at least I'm getting three squares a day. We put these people into a position where they have nothing to lose.
I think these sex offenders are kind of a tough group to stand up for. I mean, do you think the general public's always going to be on the side of, well, better to over-monitor than to under-monitor my kids?
Yeah, so I think that has a lot to do with it. I mean, you think that most people who are against these kinds of laws, who are think they're flawed in some fundamental way, are advocating for sex offenders. And certainly there are a lot of reasons to do that. I mean, we treat them differently than we do most other offenders. We treat them differently based on false understanding, you know, misconceptions about their likelihood of recidivating, and so on. But, you know, at least my research has been focused purely on the questions of public safety. So I think we misunderstand how these kinds of laws will work. And actually, they make, you know, to the extent these are quote-unquote predators or people who will take advantage of situations and are actually dangerous, I think these laws make them more dangerous. And the fact that they're on a list and a few people out there know who they are, that they're not hired by a particular employer because the employer does a background check and somebody who's thinking about dating them finds out what they are. But, you know, if they walk into a park or into a store or any place else, nobody knows that they're a sex offender. But that person's unemployed. That person can't form a relationship. And as a result, I think they're much more like a ticking time bomb.
Based on all the research you've done on sex offender laws, would you call for eliminating these registries altogether?
It's tough to have a blanket reform proposal like that. I think that it probably makes sense, although I'm not sure I can state that on the basis of my research, for there to be notification, meaning public registries that apply to a very small number of very threatening individuals, individuals who repeatedly have attacked people in the past. I think that might make sense. And if it is a small group, then people will actually benefit by knowing who they are. They won't be overwhelmed by having dozens of people in their town covered by this. They'll just be a few. And the police can actually spend more time focusing on them instead of lots and lots of resources making sure that, you know, that people who really don't pose a threat are on the registry and are maintaining their registration.
So people like who engaged in consensual sex as teenagers or before 2011, people who got caught urinating in public would be.
Yeah, I mean, so there are those kinds of examples. You know, an important thing to remember, though, is even in situations where, you know, a person might wind up being convicted of a crime like assault, sexual assault, you know, the crime, if you actually learn the facts of it, might not seem nearly like what you expect. And also, there's a lot of plea bargaining that goes on, too. So it's really hard to know just from the crime of conviction what happened here. But of course, the kinds of cases you're talking about.
Yeah.
So here, you know, I might imagine that public urination, no longer covered by the sex offender law, but exposure, you know, indecent exposure is. And if you don't look like the right kind of person and you happen to be peeing in public, I wouldn't be surprised if a police officer could arrest you for indecent exposure.
Yeah.
And that makes you a sex offender.
I have to ask you about something that startled me. I guess it never dawned on me that Michigan's law doesn't allow people who've had their criminal histories cleared to be removed from the list.
I actually don't know the answer to that, but that doesn't surprise me. In fact, I've even heard of examples of people who've never been convicted of a sex crime winding up on the sex offender list. You know, presumably that's a mistake, but once somebody makes a mistake like that, I mean, it's really tough to explain away. And the procedure and process you'd have to go through in order to get your name removed would be tough. But Michigan's expungement set-aside statute, you know, applies to more minor crimes. And the fact that it's removed for some purposes but not for others, you know, doesn't surprise me.
What do you think, Professor, would be the effective reforms that we could make in Michigan that would reduce recidivism and keep us protected and safe as we want, especially our children?
I think the obvious thing to do here is to move to more of a risk assessment type approach. So, you know, rather than using the crime of conviction, which is a historical fact, it has very little, I mean, it has something to do, but not a lot to do with the current risk posed by an individual. So we should spend some time thinking about each individual, thinking about whether they belong on this particular list, whether or not we think that putting them on the list will actually allow people to be safer, and also thinking hard about how to make people reinvest in the straight and narrow, living on the straight and narrow, and being productive citizens. Because if we make them pariahs, we make them miserable, then the threat you know, the threat of returning them to prison if they do commit another crime is much smaller. So we have to give them something to lose.
That was J.J. Prescott, University of Michigan School of Law.